Eye on the Arctic, Views from the North, I'm Elish Quinn. Well, the end of the year is a time to take stock. And here at Eye on the Arctic, it's also the time that we check in with our bloggers. Now, they've been following and analyzing Arctic news and events for you for the last 12 months. And now is when we take stock with them to find out what caught their attention, what took them by surprise, and what we in the media might have messed up along the way. Up today is Mia Bennett. You've seen her work featured on our site since the beginning. She's the founder of cryopolitics.com, and we joined her today in San Francisco. Mia Bennett, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for making the time at the end of the year to talk to us a little bit about the last 12 months, which, if we had to sum it up in one word, on your end, what would it be?
I'd probably use the word record-breaking. I think there's been just a lot of major changes happening in the Arctic this year in terms of climate, big shifts in terms of how the oil industry's outlook is appearing, and also in terms of tourism and cruising in the Arctic. I think that's changing a lot. So record-breaking is probably how I'd sum everything up.
And, you know, if we were to look at some of the top stories in different areas of 2016, what were the three that caught your eye?
Right. So I would probably say the first one, going back to that word record-breaking, would have to concern climate. So a few days ago, the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, they released their annual Arctic report card, which basically sums up all the environmental changes that have been occurring in the region annually. And this year, 2016, experienced a stronger warming signal than any other year on record, which is really dramatic change, and this has been visible in terms of record low sea ice minimum extents in both summer and wintertime, and retreat of sea ice actually in November, which is very, very unusual. And then the fall freeze-up of ice was delayed, so with all these kind of ice retreats and warming temperatures, this is just a record-breaking year for the climate. That, of course, has human impacts in terms of how local people can pursue their own activities, and also impacts on industry and that sort of thing as well. So I'd say climate is probably the first important story to highlight. A second story, probably this is one that's all over the news lately, is concerns offshore oil and gas in the Arctic. So, of course, just a few days ago, you had Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and President Barack Obama effectively jointly saying no to Arctic offshore exploration in North America. And together, the two leaders released a joint statement, which I think is coming at a very significant time, of course, because who knows what the outlook for U.S. Arctic oil will look like once President-elect Trump comes into office. But I think for the time being, with the White House in particular having designated most of the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas as indefinitely off-limits offshore leasing, this is going to be not very easy to undo. So it looks like Obama may have tried to have the final say on Arctic drilling in his last months in office. So this is a pretty big deal, I think, in terms of just as a political statement, because I think, of course, the economic calculus is not really there either for drilling, but just as a political statement, I think it's a pretty important move.
And then what was the third item on your list?
I'd say the third item is probably the voyage of Crystal Serenity, the big cruise ship through the Northwest Passage this year. I kind of saw this as very symbolic in terms of opening up a new era for Arctic tourism and Arctic cruising that, I mean, on paper doesn't require too much infrastructure, unlike, say, oil and gas, because the ship can just cruise through. Of course, there might not be enough emergency or search and rescue contingencies available, but I think we're seeing recognition at higher levels, too, of Arctic tourism and cruising as kind of perhaps a new way to develop the Arctic. And at the Arctic Circle conference in Iceland a few months ago, it sort of seemed like a lot of investors in the Arctic were talking about tourism as the new hope for northern development rather than oil and gas, which was kind of hot on the agenda a few years ago.
That's a big shift.
Yeah. I think this is kind of interesting to watch to see if it really kind of ends up being a way to develop the Arctic or if it's just yet another kind of perceived boom and bust cycle that's now tourism rather than oil and gas.
And so it's interesting, a lot of the stuff that you've highlighted is really sort of, as you mentioned, record-breaking, new things we weren't maybe expecting, or that were different from other years. Was there a story or event out of the Arctic in 2016 that when even someone like you, who looks at this all the time and is an expert on the region, that even took you by surprise?
I would probably say a couple things in Canada happened this year that I was quite surprised by. One would be the closure of the Port of Churchill in Manitoba by some private operator, Omnitrax Canada. I think this was pretty surprising to, well, both me as an Arctic watcher, and then I think even people working at the port were kind of taken aback by this abrupt move just because the port was no longer deemed economically sustainable. And in line with that, you had this year the bankruptcy of Northern Transportation Company Limited, which has supplied by barge a lot of communities in Northwest Canada for, I think, almost 80 years. So I think these two kind of things took me by surprise because although you hear a lot about long-distance shipping and transportation, the Arctic opening up between, say, Asia and Europe and North America, and then this crystal serenity voyage, the kind of shorter-distance transit within the Arctic that's very important for a lot of the communities and industrial sites there, that seems to be kind of drying up and not being very economically viable anymore. And I think this is something that doesn't really attract as much attention because it's not a very glamorous story, but I think it could have a major human impact in terms of people living there if they can't access supplies as they used to.
And when you look back at the last 12 months, you know, is there something that you noticed that you were surprised that the media didn't do a better job of covering? What was the one thing that maybe we should have been talking more about but that we overlooked?
Sure. I would probably say generally I'd really like to see a lot more reported about in the English language media on the Russian Arctic. You know, I think we'll hear stories from time to time from this region, which constitutes half of the Arctic, about, say, snowballs that suddenly appeared on a beach or thousands of reindeer dying, which, of course, the latter is an important issue. But I think aside from these kind of what you might call more or less clickbaity stories, I think the real changes that are happening in the Russian Arctic often go overlooked, and you really have to do a lot of digging to see what's happening there in a way that kind of cuts through a lot of the kind of you know, things that aren't really describing the actual shifts there. And for instance, one story that I would really be curious to learn more about is this hunger strike by unpaid workers on the Yamal Peninsula in Russia, which is really at the heart of the country's Arctic natural gas industry. And so I can't really find anything about this story in the English press, but I think it's really worth more investigation and reporting on because I feel like it brings up important issues of, you know, the ethics of oil and gas drilling in the Arctic in a way that involves people, not just environmental concerns, perhaps.
Do you think it's a question of language, or do you think that there's something else going on for the way that we talk about Russia in the West?
That's a good question. I mean, certainly language is important. It's an important barrier, I guess, in terms of how, say, English-speaking reporters can access information on Russian developments. It's pretty hard to do that except from, the Russian state-owned media outlets that publish news in English. But to get to smaller outlets, it's a bit difficult without Russian language knowledge. Aside from that, though, I do feel there is an inherent bias in terms of how, say, at least in the West, we report on Russia. So the stories that tend to be more about, say, Russia's militaristic attitude towards the Arctic or the Arctic has a crumbling region, or, you know, lately there's a story about the dozens of people who have died from alcohol poisoning in Russia. I think these are the types of stories that will get told about Russia in Western media, but are kind of just speaking to things that many people perhaps here already want to hear, which is Russia's crumbling, it's alcoholic, things like this. But I think if we were able to access kind of just different stories about Russia and the Arctic in particular, that would be really helpful, I think.
Well, a lot to think about as we go into the new year. What are you going to be watching for in 2017? Are there sort of trends or things unfolding that you're going to be making a point to keep your eye on?
Right. I think, like many of us, probably we'll all be watching for what happens after January 20th when Trump is inaugurated here in the U.S. So I think with that, I'll essentially be watching for the direction that the U.S. Arctic Council chairmanship takes in its last 4 or 5 months. You know, I think under Obama, the U.S. Arctic or the U.S. Arctic chairmanship has taken a very kind of climate-oriented direction, actually, with even President Obama going to visit Alaska and witnessing climate change firsthand and bringing that to the U.S. public to kind of publicize. That, I think, will, of course, change hugely once Trump is in office. We won't see much talk from the government at high levels on climate change, particularly in the U.S. Arctic Council. And if you imagine, say, if Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, is confirmed as Secretary of State, and if he were sent to represent the U.S. at the Arctic Council, which I find hard to imagine, but say he went, I think this just bodes for some very significant shifts in U.S. Arctic policy that certainly merit watching. And I guess related to that is whether perhaps an easing of sanctions under Trump could lead to further drilling in the Russian offshore with the cooperation of U.S. companies like ExxonMobil.
Well, Mia, fascinating to talk to you about this. And we are going to be keeping a close eye on cryopolitics in 2017 to look at some of your analysis, some of these issues as we go into the new year.
Great. I'm looking forward to it. And thanks, as always, for all of your support along the way.
Thank you, Mia Bennett. Happy holidays.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.